You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello.
Thank you, Nick. It's Joe Martinello hosting the Radio Maria program this morning. We're in Toronto. We're here in the studio, and we have the honor and the pleasure to have our colleague Dominic Campione here this morning to assist us. Hi, Dominic. How are you today?
I'm very well. I thank you, Joe. It's my honor, my pleasure to be here once again at Radio Maria with you and informing our radio listeners on a topic that you and I believe and many people that is very important, you know?
And we're always dealing with various themes in the law. And with Dominic today, we're going to carry on. We're going to carry on with the theme about talking about family law matters. We're going to concentrate a little bit later on in the program on what we call custody access, the question of children, because we know that from social and even religious perspective, the whole question of family and children is critical and important. Unfortunately, as we also all know, and it doesn't make any difference if we're Christian or non-Christian, we know that marriage breakdown is a huge factor in our modern society. It used to be 1 in 3. Some people now feel it's 2 in 5, which is like 33% to 40% of all couples could end up being divorced. And of course, when there are children involved, the problems or the issues involved with that become even more accentuated. It's an unfortunate reality that we have to deal with. And we think in the area of family law in particular, because we all come from extended families in many ways, it's an issue becomes so important because whether we're involved directly in a breakdown in a relationship where there are children involved, or whether we're parents of children, or whether we're grandparents of children, or even where we're uncles and aunts and close friends, it's an aspect of great importance and of great concern to many people who we may all have had these issues. So we're going to concentrate on family law in this program with Dominic, who's come to help us out with it, with the situation. Dominic, maybe the first thing we can do, maybe a little summary, because we did it a month ago and not everybody listens to every program, because very often in the area of family law, people just think that it's just like one law, right? It's right. Like we're lawyers, we just deal with the law. But of course, here in Canada, we have what we call a federal constitution where powers are divided between Ottawa, the federal level, and the provinces. But in the area of family law, Dominic, can you do a brief summary for our listeners as to what the law actually is and who's responsible for what?
All right. So at our last talk show, we went into what is called the jurisdictional territories. And Canada is made up of a federal government, a provincial government. And the Divorce Act is a federal statute. And in Ontario, we have the Family Law Act. And every province have their own laws with respect to family. And why? Because under the Constitution Act, we just celebrated last year 150 years, 1867.
Correct.
Under that act in particular, just to be specific, if there are lawyers out there or whatever, is Section 91, Subsection 26. It says that marriage and divorce is under the federal jurisdiction.
So that's something that applies right across Canada.
Right across the border. But the
marriage and divorce.
But the solemnization of marriage, actually getting married, and spousal and child support and property division, custody and access and adoption, child protection. Each province has an act on its own or acts that addresses the issues of custody, access, child support, marriage.
Property rights,
et cetera. In Ontario, as we are in Ontario today in Toronto, it's the major piece of legislation is called the Family Law Act.
Right. So we have this, we could say that there are different areas of responsibility, and of course, therefore, to our radio listeners, although we oftentimes talk from an Ontario perspective because we're here in Toronto, in every province, although there are a lot of similarities, things can actually be a little bit different. Or, for example, in Quebec, for our French listeners, they could be very different. Laws could be different. And so it's very, very important that wherever our listeners are across Canada, that they appreciate, not so much in the areas of federal jurisdiction, as you said, the big issues, the marriage and divorce issues, but in terms of property rights and children's rights and so on, there could be a more important local law that is important that they have to address.
That's right. But there appears in my review of sometimes we have to deal with different jurisdiction, a family coming from Quebec or Alberta, etc. There is some kind of common ground, you know, like when it comes to children, the actual marriage, even the laws, you know, whether it's a test of best interest of the child, etc. But I think even our listeners, we know we have marriage, Joe, you know, what marriage is.
Yes.
But some people
say. But that whole idea of marriage, as we know from a Christian perspective, has moved, let's say, beyond the traditional Judeo-Christian
That's
ethic
correct.
That has been so important in Western society.
Yeah. Example, since 2005, marriage may be formed between two individuals of different or same sex, for example, something that is new. There is also definitions of what a spouse is under the provincial legislation, a common mm-hmm. law spouse, you know, mm-hmm. if there's a permanent relationship, if there's been more than 3 years, you know, there are laws and that control that. Yeah.
Right. And so from that rule of law that we have now relating to marriage, of course, everything from divorce follows from that.
That's right.
Because if you're not married, you can't get divorced.
That's
right.
That's correct. But but you can get separated though. You know, under common law, you know, separation. But there's another thing that our listeners maybe should know is that a marriage, the annulment of marriage. What is it? When people say a marriage is nullified, you know, it's voidable if the marriage has not been consummated, in other words, all right? And it's void if they didn't have capacity, such as they're under the age of 16, you know, underage or being married before. So it's just a little bit just to set the tone, all right?
Right, because a lot of times, especially from a Christian perspective, and certainly with respect to what is normally called canon law,
right?
We have this principle in the Judeo-Christian ethic that when you are married to someone, you are married for life. Mm-hmm. And of course, this varies, of course, from the Jewish tradition, where there was a process called the get, where you could basically disclaim your wife, you know, for any of the men interesting, it's not so easy, but you would disclaim your wife. But in the Christian ethos and religion, of course, you're married for life. But notwithstanding all of that, canon law has a process which deals with what we call annulment. So if, for example, some of us may have had friends who are Roman Catholic, and then they were married, and then they were divorced, and then they've gone through annulment, and people think, well, what does this all mean? But from a canon law perspective, if you've been married, marriage is indissoluble, so that if there, but the church has laws also, the Roman Catholic Church has laws about, as you said, Dominic, people maybe who married for the wrong reasons or under false pretenses or other issues, where the marriage can be dissolved in the eyes of the church, and people become annulled. The marriage becomes annulled. So is that idea also part of the legal situation, like the canon law, or is it?
Well, look,
because I'm sure some people listening, because in a Christian perspective, they think, oh, you know, annulment. And we have to also maybe mention that there's a strict division between the church and the state.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this we're talking, I just mentioned the aspect of canon law, because that's from a religious church perspective. But from a secular law point of view, which is what we're talking about today, is there something called annulment? Does it work the same way? Is it a little different?
Well, you can, I mean, a marriage civilly can be annulled if they're... I gave an example earlier, if the parties are under the age, for example, right?
Yeah.
If there's been a previous marriage, you know,
right.
It's not only grounds for divorce, but it's annulled. I mean, it never existed.
Never existed. You mentioned non-consummation.
Non-consummation.
Because, you know, as I don't think just only in the Christian ethos, but certainly the idea of being married is, of course, sharing the love with the other person. But also the aspect of procreation,
which is the religious aspect. If I can put it there, and in one of my first cases, there was one of the non-consummation of marriage. We asked for the marriage to be voidable. You know,
voidable, right? Yeah. So it is still possible, even under secular law, to obtain an annulment. Though I understand, practically speaking, there aren't too many cases of those kinds of cases. Correct.
Well, if it has to be on the basis of voidable, there's got to be also supporting documentation such as the medical evidence, etc. That needs to be done. But I just bring that up because there's sometimes confusion on annulment and what it is and when it happens. You know, but what is disheartening is what you said at the beginning with respect to marriage breakdown, and it affects. Not only the parties themselves, but especially when there are children involved, you know?
Correct. So this is where the issues become even more acute, we'll call it, mm-hmm. is the relationship to children. So when they talk about separation, Dominic, and marriage breakdown, which is what we're looking at,
right?
Can you share with us this whole idea about separation and how it involves children and moving maybe even towards our studies of today or of custody and access.
All right. So maybe just divorce is a legal step that the court will make for a divorce order that gives the right to remarry again. It just splits the marriage.
Right.
Okay. It's a process that is done, and there are grounds for divorce.
So people would think, especially in the modern Canadian reality, where we have, for example, we know that in the Muslim faith, I believe you could marry, if I'm not mistaken, I think three times in most sects. So the idea of divorce is very different because people just assume sometimes, perhaps falsely, that because, let's say, someone is of the Muslim faith, that they can get married 2-3 times in Canada. That's not true, is it?
No.
No, because we still have the crime of bigamy under the criminal code.
That's correct. And you are in Canada, and you have to abide by the laws of Canada or the country in which you reside. You know?
Correct. It's secular law.
It is. You know, religion is an important factor to be considered for the children, you know, and in the issues of custody, etc. So let's go back to some. You got grounds. You can have a 1-year separation gives you grounds for the divorce. Adultery is a ground. Mental and physical cruelty so as to render your marriage intolerable. Those gives you grounds, all right? But do you have to get a divorce? Well, as I said, it gives you the right to remarry. But you can have a marriage breakdown and enter into a separation agreement,
right? So it doesn't, you don't actually have to go through divorce if you don't want to for some reason.
No, I mean, the parties can live separated, and separation means living separate and apart, and that's also another whole issue. What does living separate and apart mean? Right. Well, you can live under the same roof, living separate and apart. A partner can, or a spouse can live in the on the living room, the wife, the other partner in the bedroom. All right, they're living separate and apart. All right, now the test is that you got to live separate and apart for a period of 1 year, and you can live under the same roof but living separate and apart. Right?
Yeah, I've heard stories in the past where I had people say, "Oh yeah, Joe Blow, he says he's separated from his wife, but he lives in the same house. There must be something else going on." You know, right. It's a hard concept for people to realize, but the economic reality sometimes, unfortunately, we know that when couples and families split or separate, the economic reality becomes somewhat poorer, financially speaking.
That's right. But the other test is that the courts would like to know is, you've been living separate, but how did you represent yourself outside in the public? Hmm. Did you share the baptisms together? Did you share the communion? Did you go to the wedding? Did you demonstrate to the people that you are, you know?
Yeah, really living separate and apart.
So
yeah.
There is some proof sometimes required on that. But a separation agreement basically sets out the parties, they agree on the division of their property, the child support, the spousal support, custody and access, dispute resolution, and disclosure, which is very important. So
now, Dominic, the you know, you're starting to talk about some of the important issues relating to separations and very important issues, especially relating to children.
Right.
And one of the things that I think that perhaps our listeners are always they think or they're wondering about is that if something happens in terms of a marriage breakdown and there's children, okay. And this is really important, not only for the couple involved, but for grandparents, right. Maybe even uncles and aunts, right? Who have a certain bond to their nephews and nieces, and right. All of a sudden, there's this marriage breakdown and this separation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people say, well, maybe because they watch a lot of American TV, oh, the woman always gets the children. You ever hear that comment, you know, like, what does it mean? I mean, is it just like another urban legend, as we call it, or a myth? Is it is it true? Is it not true? How is it true? Why would it be true?
If I can say it's on the borderline, let's put it there. There's a rule of thumb where we're talking about custody and children. The mother has given birth to the child. It's a physical fact. The mother has nursed that child. Grown up with that child, established a relationship, very strong. That bonding is there from initial physical birth and on. And if in the norm, if everything is proper, there is, it's a mother, right?
The mother is still a key role.
A very key role.
Even though right? We men like to think that maybe, you know, we're just as important, maybe we have to admit that maybe the role of the woman is a little bit more special or particular.
It is special, but it is not the actual sine qua non that, no, it's a mother that has right. To have custody of the child. I mean, the test is basically who... what is in the best interest of that child, depending right. On certain questions, certain issues that we will later get into. So,
because obviously, usually what one often sees in a marriage breakdown is each of the persons think that they are the most suitable person to raise their children, right?
Right.
That's very often the dynamic because everybody looks at things from their own perspective.
100%. Everybody doesn't. And that's why... It's always good when you have your positions and if this matter cannot be resolved by way of a separation agreement or a parenting plan, that each one presents their position through an application in court and let the judge decide. And so certain tests the judge will apply, one of them being the best interest. But what concerns me is two things that is important is when people separate, it says, and there's children involved, is who's going to make these decisions? Who will the child live with? How? Who will make the major decisions about how to take care and raise their child? How right. much time will each party spend with each child? What role will each party have in caring for the child? That's called the custody and access, right? And if people can do a parenting schedule and they're cooperating and now it's very difficult because, and keep in mind, that when people separate, they're not on the best terms.
No, there's always a lot of raw emotions and involved, right. and different perspectives about where the relationship went wrong. That's great.
But if, and I always tell everybody, do not look at it. Yes, there is a short-term effect in case of extreme violence or abuse or et cetera, or the safety of the children, where you, the attention is to that temporary effect. But in the long term, these children have a father and they have a mother. They have a parenting person, and they got to make the best for that child. So custody and access really play an important role. And if the parties can cooperate, avoid the conflict, the children will also appreciate that and get more emotionally stabilized. You know?
Right. That's, it strikes me just because of human nature, how difficult that is.
Right.
So let's assume that people are not so cooperative, Dominic, okay, which is, I think, a lot of times the case. They're right. Not so cooperative. They may have the best of intentions, but sometimes their own personal emotions get in the way. How does it actually work? What do people do when they want to bring separation forward? I mean, they usually hire lawyers, right?
That's correct. Sometimes, my recommendation, get yourself a lawyer, right? I can probably advise you of the consequences of the term that you will agree upon. But it's not necessarily. You can have someone who's capable. It's an agreement that you enter into if you do a parenting plan. Mm-hmm. You can go to a mediator.
Mm-hmm. Because we've seen advertisements now about family law mediation because, of course, as in all litigation, it can be a fairly expensive process and not all families necessarily have the income to maybe financially address the situation in a way that, let's say, won't harm both of them, let's say. Because we've seen, I'm sure, Dominic, you and I both seen cases where people are in conflict and they can spend an awful lot of money arguing over a lot of things.
And it can get expensive hiring a lawyer, a mediator, you know, but keep in mind there's some distinction between a mediator and an arbitrator.
Okay, point that out. Explain to our listeners.
So a mediator, you go there, I mean two parties. You don't have to have a lawyer there, but it's recommended. Mm-hmm. They do not give legal advice. That's a mediator. They do not make decisions, and they cannot take sides. All right? The arbitrator is usually a lawyer, a mental health professional, retired judges. They're trained like a mediator. If parents cannot agree with an arbitrator can make a decision, right? Hmm. And of course, the arbitrator's decision can become binding, like a court order, if either party. Usually each parent gets their own legal advice or the lawyer present. And the arbitrator makes a decision based on the Canadian family law or the best interests of the child. But keep in mind, he cannot make a decision, we were talking before, on based on religion or culture or other. It's not a get. It's not a Muslim kind of thing. It is a very civil.
And I was going to say that in the past, we go back 50 years ago, I think it would be fair to say that a lot of priests played the role of mediators in the past because in a position of trust, and they would try to encourage couples to stay together and perhaps to work out their differences, right? Not always possible, but they played that role. But of course today with the lower number of priests and the time constraints that they have.
But it's interesting, Joseph, that you bring that up because one of the lawyer's function, especially when you're doing an application for divorce, all right, it's right in the Divorce Act. Hmm. It's called, I have to make a statement as a lawyer. There's no hope of reconciliation. I have to ask the question, is reconciliation possible? Mm-hmm. Probable, let's put it this way. All right. And when you think of reconciliation, it's peacemaking. Is there a way of this family, the salvaging the family?
Right, and I think that this just underlines the importance
of family
values.
And the court wants to know that.
Yeah, and it underlines the importance of families in our judicial, our legal system.
100%.
It's not just, as John Lennon used to say, I'll sue you, you sue me. we'll all get our lawyers and have a grand old time. There's that old song, you know. It's not just that. It the family underpins the law and the societal attitudes. So once you've done, let's say, your due diligence and you've seen that the matters are irreconcilable for a number of reasons and what needs to occur. I mean, there's obviously the property issues, which we talked about in our last segment, and how people can discuss or argue about that.
That's a very big topic.
That's a very big topic. We mentioned it briefly, and it's a lot of details. Today, we're leaning towards now the custody and access part. And so we have a couple who are there, each of whom thinks that they're the best person to take care of the kids.
Right.
And do the kids have any say? I guess if they're not, they're too young, it's one thing. But what happens, Dominic?
Because
I think people, especially, you know, not even the couples who are listening, but even, you know, parents whose children are splitting, or grandparents who, of course, always feel like they're left out of the equation.
That's right.
They should understand what is going on in the process.
Okay. So I think the best way to discuss this topic is to understand what custody is,
right?
And access and the types of custody, and then after certain things that will come out of there, such as applications that need to be done or resolutions, etc. So custody is not like what we say, which parent the child lives, with or how much time a child spends with each parent. Custody is a right to make important decisions about how to take care for and raise a child. Decisions on education, religion, healthcare. Those are the main three. Mm. Yes, usually the person who has custody of the child is probably the main person, you know, that has primary role. However,
So that's the person that makes that decision. As you said, those three issues, health, education, religion, very important.
Yeah.
Now, my earlier comment,
because you can have one parent has custody and the child might spend equal time living with each parent, or the child might mainly be with one parent, but both parents have custody and share the decision making.
Dominic, this is exactly the point I wanted to come to. People have this notion, maybe from Hollywood, that the woman always gets custody of the children. So can you talk a little bit about, because I think this is really a big issue for, like I said, a lot of people, particularly maybe for men, and perhaps even parents or grandparents on the male side who feel, once again, because of Hollywood or whatever, the woman has all the rights and, you know, they're going to get excluded and so on.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about this idea of custody or joint parenting?
Right.
Is it something that actually works? Is it really that prevalent? Yeah. Or are we still looking at the female
It does work. It works on certain scenarios. So custody will work when parents are cooperating.
Right.
And that's basically the main ones called joint custody. Or shared custody, or shared parenting, where the courts or there's a movement of taking the word custody out because it denotes kind of conflict situation and use the word parenting, So it's joint, shared, and that is a situation where both parents must agree on major decisions that affect their child. They need the other parent for that decision. Parties have to be on so-called on the same page. They got to cooperate, not conflictual. Sole custody is where one parent makes all the important decisions about the child, but it's always important to try to get the input of the other parent. Now, when one parent has custody and the other parent usually has what is called access, see how they're intermingled, so the decision as to who gets custody and who gets access, if you don't agree on if the parties are, and then after it will be left up to the courts. But before we get into that, it's important also to know what access is. So access is a parent who has access, it has a right to ask for and get information about the child's health, education, well-being from the other parent or places or schools or hospitals. But sometimes in the hospital, when you're trying to get, I've been in situations that they will not release until you get the consent of the person who has that custody of that child.
I see. So the access rights and the health issue can be a little bit limited. I know on the educational level,
right,
just because my wife is an administrator, mm-hmm, that this is an issue that often arises,
right,
where, let's say, even if the, I'll just use the example, let's say the wife has custody of the child, and she thinks that the father can be denied information about education for the child, whereas the Education Act specifically provides for the parent, both parents, to have access to that information. And it's something that, amazingly, people don't realize, or yeah, that the other, you know, I have custody. It almost treats custody, you use the choice of the word, it's almost like it's property, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, it's like, but this is mine, not yours. You know, yeah, you're out of the equation, and therefore, it's my property. I can decide whatever I want. How dare you try to step on my property?
Right. So it is true, and like I said, there is this trend of moving away from that property custody to a so-called parenting
model.
And I believe there is this thing, a section of the new bill, 78 out of, yeah, the Divorce Act,
trying to change
that, I wouldn't call it stigma, but at least some kind of making it a little bit more on common ground, you know, with everybody.
I'm not a big believer in changing titles, because in the area of estate, they wanted to change the word probate to estate administration.
Yeah.
And many, you know, like 30 years later, everybody still talks about probate. So sometimes the old words, they die hard, as they say.
Well, that's right. But let me read you a little piece of an article. It says, Bill C-78 is a revamp of the Divorce Act, was tabled in the House of Commons. The new proposed act focuses changes relating to children. First, the bill drops the terms custody and access and instead refers to parenting orders and parenting time.
Oh, right? Parenting orders and,
okay,
time. Yeah,
the intent of the legislation is to reduce conflict by legal decisions on parenting arrangements without stigma relating to the so-called custodial parent and the access parent. All right? So, I mean, we're waiting for that. Hasn't happened yet, yeah, from my best of my
recollection.
Let's
say it's a positive movement. We'll see what happens, yeah,
of it. We'll see what happens.
So now we have this
and there
couple.
Are types of access, if you wanted.
Yeah, I think it would be good maybe to, we're talking a little bit about custody.
Yeah.
It can be single, both. Dominic, have you ever seen cases where neither parents get custody? It's given to somebody else, like,
yes,
grandparents?
Yes, there have been.
Unusual cases, maybe?
There have been unusual cases, where a step parent or a grandparent or other relative, some or someone close, steps in, you know, where there's been undoubtedly, let's say, if the both partners are, if there's death in both of them, some close relative,
yes,
there. There have been situations that I've seen also where there's been a death, right? And an appointment has been made under the will to appoint Mr. X or Mr. and Mrs. X as guardians or custodians of that child. And that is only good for 90 days, you know. That happens too. And you can have a situation where under the will, someone is appointed as who is not the partner or the spouse as a guardian of that child.
And of the property of that child, too.
That's correct. Right. That's right. And yeah, there could be an issue then, is the other spouse so just because you're a spouse, you're not automatically the custodian of that child in the event of death of that partner.
Yeah,
and there can be litigation.
Yeah, and Dominic, I'm glad you raised the point, although it's a little bit of a collateral issue,
yeah,
because it's wills and estates. But
that's
I
right.
think our listeners should understand that, once again, a child is not, it's all interrelated, and a child is not property.
That's right.
Because, you know, I've had many clients in the past said, well, if I say that my brother should be the custody of, have custody and care of the property and care of my child, something happens to me, that overrides everything. The answer is no, mm-hmm, because it's just an indication of your will that the court will not accept as binding, because the court, as the overarching, important goal of doing whatever is in the best interest of the child.
That's right.
So again, it's not a property issue.
No.
People sometimes confuse it, even in wills and estates context, where we often tell them, listen, this is only an indication. The court may respect your expression of volition, but it's ultimately up to the judge or the courts to decide what's in the best interest of the child.
And talking on that, since we've mentioned best interest of the child, what does a court look at?
Yeah, that's all a right, good question, Dominic. Down.
All right, so
yeah, what is the best interest of the child?
Well, the usual assumption of the judges, it is basically, it is better for a child to have a relationship with both parents. That's the best thing.
That's right? A given, right?
That's
away.
Given. That is the primary thing, right?
Right.
So what does a judge look at? It looks at, in deciding best interest, the relationship between each parent and the child, the emotional ties between each parent and the child, how long the child lived in a stable environment.
Very important.
Each parent's plan for a child's care and upbringing. Right? Each parent's ability to take care for that child, the ability. The child's views and wishes, which we'll get into.
The child's views and wishes. Yeah. And this is something that people think, again, because they associate children with property.
Right.
That the child has no input into
That's correct. And I'll get to that very short. If there has been an abuse against any family member or any child, right? So normally the judges also do not consider past behavior of a parent unless it makes them less able to be a good parent.
Right. So this is the classic argument between couples.
She committed adultery.
Yeah,
he committed adultery.
She's a bad person.
Because she did that.
Yeah.
That is not taken considered unless that who is to blame for the family breakup is not taken into consideration unless there has been, what can I say, it takes into account if a parent was ever in the past ever violent or abusive,
right? Right.
Towards their partner, towards a parent of the child, or anyone in the household. Mm. So sometimes, he says, hey, that's past behavior, right? I said, she or he has abused, physically abused, mentally abused the child, the mother, the grandparent, etc., in the presence of the child, right?
Mm, yes.
That is taken into consideration, right? So If we want to go now, we touched about, what about the wishes of the children?
Yeah.
All right,
what about them?
So,
I mean, obviously, if you have a 2 or 3 year old child,
I don't want to see my father. I don't want to see my mother, right? I don't want to go see him. I'm tired of visiting,
Yeah.
All right, so issues come up, custody. All right, so under the law, the judge can appoint what is called a representative of the child. It's called under the Office of the Children's Lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge can make a decision to make an assessment on custody and access. And usually these people, it's a court order, right? Mm-hmm. You people have broken up. They can't agree on custody, have no parenting plan. They go to court. The lawyer would say, that's why you should have a lawyer. He says, look, there's very serious issues, conflict situation. You also have a situation where the father says he's the best parent. The mother says she's the best parent. And we have a child who's 10, 11, 5 years old, or 12 or 14 years old. Right? And somebody has to represent these people. Right? There should be an assessment. In the normal circumstances, the judge will order an assessment on custody and access, and this is carried out by a psychologist, usually, or an expert in the field, psychologist, a social worker, a health professional, and they go out and interview the children.
Yeah, so we have this objective process.
That's right.
If people are completely unreasonable, they have this objective process to help the court decide,
right,
in the context of this particular family, what's in the best interest of the child.
That's correct. And what does this person do? Interviews not only the children, the parents, sometimes the grandparents, the teachers, where they are attending, maybe if it's a daycare center, etc. And they compile this report. And I'm going one on next Tuesday. Hmm. And then after, were the two lawyers representing father and mother, respectively, And there, in this particular case, there are at least four children, you know? Hmm. And the report she has made, prepared, a social worker experience has prepared a report or her recommendation that we're going to listen to those recommendations to hopefully get some kind of
a resolution
on it. All right. Mm-hmm. And the judge very takes this very seriously into consideration in making his recommendation in the event the people cannot, you know, the parties cannot make a decision.
Right, because oftentimes we think of people who are the judges.
Impartial.
Right? Yeah, impartial. And I was going to say, sometimes our view of judges are a little bit jaded, once again, because I think we watch
too much
TV and watch too much politics with President Trump. But the judges, Dominic, the judges who are in, especially in the family law area, because there's actually a special part of the court dedicated to family law, right?
That's correct.
The family law, family court division in Ontario.
Yeah.
So who are these judges? Are they... how do they become judges? I mean, are they real estate lawyers or estate lawyers like me who don't necessarily understand all the family law issues? Or are they people who are a little bit more knowledgeable?
Well, you know, if this is a dissertation now and an application for a judge and the qualification, undoubtedly every judge is scrutinized by the appropriate department of the Attorney General, the province, etc. They have already, usually these judges are lawyers or past lawyers who have practice in that field.
So they would have an intimate knowledge of the law and have a lot of experience.
They would have an intimate knowledge, Joseph. They're taught and the decision. We lawyers have read decisions, you know, left and right, and we can get decisions says yes, and the decision says no. Oh, yeah. But when it comes to making these family decisions, I believe in the majority of cases they're pretty fair and they listen to both sides. Unfortunately, if the sides cannot make up their decision, somebody has to make that decision, has to step in, and that's the judge. And I always say, look, my Mr. Father and Mr. Mother, it's better you guys make a decision. Here you got two lawyers. Yeah. If you guys can't agree, they're going to listen, and he's going to make that decision. If it's fair and reasonable and according to the law, you know, it's going to be hard to appeal that decision, right?
Yeah, and this is where we call the judge is in the old Latin...
Trier of fact.
And the old Roman tradition of law, the parens patriae jurisdiction, the obligation in those old Latin words...
That's right.
...to make a decision if the couple themselves can't make a reasonable...
So we have that, we call the OCL, or the Office of the Children's Lawyer, who would also then be part of the proceedings and... representing that child during the proceeding. Then the judge can also order ask for a private assessment. That can be very expensive because it's paid by the parties. The OCL, usually if the OCL gets an order, they have to review the case. If they accept the case, it's usually free of charge. All right?
I understand.
So...
So Dominic, let's say we're now just stepping forward. Let's say that there is... maybe a decision on custody, and then we still call custody an access. Again, we try to tell everybody about access. You know, it's not a property right.
That's correct.
So it's the child is not property. So now maybe the biggest lament that is seen, particularly on the male side of the equation, is that my former wife. She has custody for whatever reason, and I'm supposed to see the kids, and she doesn't want to bring them, or the kids don't want to come, or she decides she'd like to move to British Columbia because the weather's nicer, all kinds of things. So this access rights, right. I mean, how do you deal with that in terms of, what does it mean, really?
Well, let's go into that and we'll answer that question on relocation or moving. All right, there are types of at least there's four main types of access.
Four types.
Yeah, okay. I always say four. I mean, there are different versions in how you call them. One is called I call them reasonable access, also referred to as liberal and general access. This is when the parties, like I mentioned before, the best scenario for children are where parties, the husband and wife, mother and father. cooperate. All right,
And maybe they don't live too far apart.
No, far apart. Yeah. And you know, I say that in my experience, the parents, if they really care and they're not restricted for employment reasons, they're pretty well live in the same 20 kilometers, 10 kilometers around each other because they have a stake in the children. They want to be right. with their children. Right. That's cooperating people. And they easily can change the situation of access, you know, what, 1 week with you or, look, I can pick up the children. They're cooperating. It's called reasonable access, right. either by phone, physical, or whatever. Then there are fixed access or what's called specified access. Mm-hmm. And that is where... you will have the children on your birthday for a certain period of time, your child's birthday, certain periods of our holidays, Easter, Christmas, long weekends, Father's Day, Mother's Day, religious occasions.
Very detailed.
Very detailed. Like, yes. You know, just...
Like the Bible.
Like I'm working on one. It's just on the actual parenting. 1, 2, 3, 26 paragraphs with respect to who, when, where, you know, that right. kind of thing. Of
I have 2 weeks holidays with the kids in the summer, so I can go bring them to Italy to see Nonna, for example. Yeah, yeah for example.
And, and there is some credit to that because at least the parties know who gets them at specific time, and the children in their mind are set up in that
there's
way.
There's a certain discipline.
There's
to
a
it.
Discipline. Yeah. yeah.
Perfect.
The other one is supervised access. Hmm. And that access, which is supervised by a third party or another person, it usually involves when a parent has a serious drinking problem, a drug problem.
Dependency.
Yeah, yeah. dependency, abused a child in the past or threatened or tried to take the child away from the other parent. And the supervisor can be as simple as another relative. A mutually known person, a social worker. Sometimes there are access centers where public access centers. It could be in a public library or the CAS, which is a short form for the Children's Aid Society, you know, or Children's Aid Worker present.
Okay,
so that's supervised. Then after there's the worst scenario where there's no access.
Right? Oh, no access.
No access. Right. This is a very extreme cases where the parent has seriously neglected or abused their child, or if the child's safety can no longer be protected. Right?
Mm, very serious.
So those are the, I call them the four main ones. Right? Now, to answer your question, you say,
yeah, because okay,
about traveling.
Yeah, traveling. Like traveling. I decide, let's say for some reason I have custody of my son, and I decide. I don't know. Italy's a better place to live in. Right. I'm going to move back to Italy. I don't care what my wife says.
Right.
And, what does she know anyway?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, what happens with that? I mean, do I have a right if I have custody or not? Or what do I have to do?
Well, first of all, if you have a parenting plan and you agree, and sometimes in the separation agreement, you really address as an important issue to address, where you say, hey, you know what? If you're moving within 20 kilometers, 30 kilometers, 50 kilometers, 50 kilometers, half an hour from my distance, and not a problem, you can do so. It's already written there. If you should move for more than 50 kilometers or 90 kilometers, then you got to get my consent or give me at least 90 days notice.
Mm-hmm.
And the main test is going to be, one of the tests is, of course, keep in mind, always behind the courts and judges, test is best interests of the child, right? But if it's, for example, if it interferes with the access of the access parent, all right, that move should not prevent access, all right? Because
not prevent access.
So if you are the, like you say, custody of the child, you want to go to Vancouver and you're the primary and it's a joint custody, and there's no reason just because of your employment or whatever it is, hey, wait a minute, you don't expect your wife to travel all the way every weekend to Vancouver. It's going
to
be very difficult. So there's going to be an issue there that has to be resolved, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is important consideration to done. You need the input of the other party. Okay, and if you're traveling, let's say you're traveling, sometimes you put in a separation agreement. So 1 week or 2 weeks, I'll give you the full itinerary, name, address, where I'm going to be staying, which hotel, what flight number, etc. What do you do? You know, if you have joint custody?
Because especially today, because there are a lot of people who are married, let's say, like you said, either within Canada, United States, Mexico, Europe, and so on. They may have other families around the world and so on.
And it's great to extend the family and get to know who they are around the world. But first, does it interfere with the access of the access parent? We call them the access parent for now. Two is, you should get the consent or a travel consent letter, and you should check with the officials of that country that you're going in, as well as the country here, because you can have everything ready, ready to go, and the child's under 16 years of age, and we can get into that with respect to because you need the consent to travel, a passport of that child if it's under 16, right? But you need a travel consent letter, all right, from the other side, and you can get all ready to go at the airport and say, I'm sorry, can't let you go through. Panic starts, you know? So I would say get everything in order. If they have a cooperating spouse or partner, get the travel consent letter duly signed, check with the official government if that's fine, and it should suffice. Now, the best approach would be if the child's over 16, has a passport, not a problem.
Not a problem, because the child's fairly independent.
That's your area, immigration, right?
Yeah, the child's fairly independent at that time.
Yeah. So it's important. So relocation and even traveling, the input of the other party is there, all right? And I've noticed also over the years, and I think between you and I, Joe, and the number of years, we'll probably get in the elder-senior stage if we add the number of years that we've been in practice.
Right.
You know, it's very hard, it's painstaking to see children really, because they see every move that the parent does. Yes. They'll understand, they can feel it. They can feel it. And so if they can cooperate, it would be the best thing that can happen.
Now, Dominic, talking about the, let's say, a little bit older crowd that might be listening, the grandparents.
Yeah.
And this whole question of access. Okay, they're not going to have custody because the parenting rights are the parents' rights. But now the grandparents, who, of course, have probably seen their grandchildren be born, they've seen the breakup of the family, but they still have, of course, a very soft spot in their hearts for the grandchildren, and they want to maintain that link that they grew up with and they appreciate and they love. Do grandparents really have any input into what's the best interest of the child?
I believe they do, okay? But if a grandparent is a grandparent because just gets a title of a grandparent, because biologically that grandparent is there and says, I want to exercise my rights as a grandparent. That's not enough. Mm-hmm. You really got to be part of that raising of that child, caregiving of that child, loving the child, all right? Helping taking the time and energy to watch the child, all right?
To have that emotional bond.
That emotional bond, all right? Of course, and like everybody, they can make the application, and some of the
because you know what happens, I think, Dominic, too, is that because of the dynamic between the couple, of course, the opposite party's parents are no good anymore, or whatever, you know, or not seen in a positive light. So can the grandparents get involved? Can they be involved in a process of trying to maybe arbitrate some continuing involvement with their grandchildren?
Well, you know,
can they go to court?
Even? Yeah, well, they can go to court. And, you know,
it's expensive. Yeah.
No, it is. You know, I'm saying they have the right to go to court. And the law in Ontario says that the best interest of the child test includes looking at the relationship between the grandparents and the child.
Okay.
The judge will also want to know about what? Why you don't want the grandparents to have access to your child. The relationship the grandparents and your child had in the past, whether grandparents have been your child's caregiver.
Right, which
whether
we
your
see
child,
very often
that's
today,
right, whether your child has lived with the grandparents. In some cases, the child's views and wishes, again, OCL, assessment, etc. The role of the grandparent can play in the role that grandparent can play in that life. All right?
Yeah, this is actually good news, Dominic, because
it's costly, though. Huh?
It's costly. I understand because we've seen the tremendous, you know, although I don't practice family law, I've seen the tremendous emotional turmoil that is created by the grandparents as a result of the family breakup.
But it's not given. It's not just because you're a grandparent.
Right. But let's say the emotional turmoil, because they have a certain emotional bond and investment, let's say, with their grandchild. And how difficult it is, because they feel like they are excluded. They feel like they're the ones being divorced, almost, you know, as opposed to the couple.
Joseph, you know, I'm a three-time over now grandparent, and it's the best experience. And I always say I said to a dear friend of mine that there should be another commandment that thou shalt live at least until you have experienced grandparenthood. All right, but it's a special feeling that everybody has. But in overall of family law, if you can cooperate and look out for the best interests of the children, it's a long-term affair. When you marry, when you take that vow before God, it's a lifetime commitment, all right? Of course, we have the civil laws and all that, as we've talked about marriage breakdown, but it's so important that the children, we give the best to the children. We brought them into this world. They should be given the best care.
Thank you, Dominic. It's. I think we're going to terminate this segment. I want to thank you once again for discussing, I think, in great detail, with also examples that are maybe a little bit easier for the people listening to us to understand and appreciate, particularly in the area of our custody and access today. And some of the issues are enormous, but these are some of the issues that I think our viewers will find particularly important and provide further food for thought. Dominic, always wonderful
and
to
if
have
they,
you here.
If they need to reach me, they can call Radio Maria.
They'd
or
be
call
happy.
Campioni and Associates, Dominic Campioni.
Absolutely. We appreciate really your involvement in all this.
It's we started off with honor and pleasure. Once again, thank you.
Thank you, Dominic. Back to Nick in the studio.
You have been listening to Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.